Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 150, recorded February 11th, 2013.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello. So, this week, we have Tom in Provo, and Tony in New York, and Ryan in Arizona.
Cool.
And before we start, I want to give a little shout out.
Okay.
We had someone new like our Facebook page this week, which is lovely. We always like it when more people like us. he's from India, I believe, and his name is Sagar Patil. And I'm sorry if I butchered that. But I thought it was pretty cool because when I looked at the little notification that says so-and-so liked Aquarimax, next to his name was, for his profile picture, was a picture of Shahid Kapoor. Which, if you don't know who that is, he's a Bollywood actor, and we really like Bollywood movies at our house. Well, I really like Bollywood movies, and so Russ is learning to like them, and he likes the ones where they blow lots of stuff up, rather than the romantic ones. So, Mr. Patil, I thought it was very cool that you had Shahid Kapoor is your profile picture page, and for half a second I thought Shahid Kapoor liked Aquarimax. And it was fun. So if you've never seen his movies, go watch them because he's an awesome dancer. And now we will talk about aquariums instead of Bollywood.
Okay.
My little rant is over.
Okay, who's first?
We have Tom in Provo.
Okay.
He says, happy to hear a new edition of the Wallstat book is out. I'll be interested to learn whether it's changed much. I've been working through the second edition, and it is not easy going. Still, I'm learning a lot about aquarium chemistry, and have been glad to find something for hobbyists that goes beyond the basic nitrogen cycle. The information is valuable, even for those who don't plan to create a Wallstat-style aquarium. And he says, many thanks for the link to the Wallstat article on small shrimp tanks. It is now on my list of things to try, quote-unquote, when I have time.
We've got a lot of those things,
yeah.
Don't we?
Yeah. Oh, another not really related thing to that, when I have time. You know, bucket lists? That's like, when I have time list, it's kind of like a bucket list. And your bucket list, of course, is things to do before you, quote-unquote, kick the bucket. And speaking of Bollywood, Our daughter is very funny because she has decided that being in a Bollywood movie with Shah Rukh Khan, who's another actor, is on her bucket list. And that makes me laugh. Okay, now I'm really going to stop talking about Bollywood and talk about fish. Okay. Russ is laughing at me. Okay, by the way, when I talk to my fish, I most commonly tell them, don't eat your babies while I'm at work. We should make a book, Funny Things to Say to Your Pets. Take care and keep up the great podcast. I'm looking forward to anything that will help me sort out the various kinds of aquarium lighting.
Okay, well, we're going to hit the lighting hard today.
Alrighty. Well, don't hit it too hard because they break.
We don't want it to break.
Yeah. That's messy.
I asked Tom specifically what he was looking for with lighting, and he said his particular interest was for a planted tank. He wants to know how... you know, the ins and outs of lighting a planted tank, probably a 20 or 30 gallon long tank. And since we've mentioned on the podcast that most kits you get, the lighting is insufficient for the plants. So he wanted to know, when he looks into lighting, he can find things that cost just a few bucks to more than $1,000. Or he's wondering, what is he going to do with all this fluorescent, compact fluorescent, T5, LED, and metal halide lighting? He wants some direction. He wants to get something that works for him, doesn't want to get something he doesn't need, or is not enough for what he wants to do. So we're going to kind of attack it from that standpoint. If you want to light a 20-gallon tank to grow some freshwater plants, a lot of our show is going to be dedicated towards that today. Because Tom asks a great question, and it's one that other listeners have posed before, so we're just going to go ahead and do it this time.
Okay. Okay, so let's start with a single tube fluorescent.
Okay. Well, a lot of kits come with, or came with, fewer kits come with them now, but a lot of kits come with a single tube fluorescent. And the reason why, basically, is that it's adequate for seeing the fish, and usually isn't that much light, so it's not as likely to encourage a whole lot of algae growth. Can encourage some, but not that much. And you can grow a few things depending on the depth of the tank. If you have a 20-gallon long and you have a fluorescent light with one tube, or a single tube fluorescent, that's either T12 or T8, and it goes basically the length of the tank, and whatever separates the light bulb from the water, aquarium water, is transparent, it's like glass or glass-like, then you probably can grow a few plants with it, some low-light plants with it.
Like
Anubias, like Java moss, Java fern, some cryptocorns, like that. Those kinds of plants usually do okay with that. Some floating stem plants, like hornwort, just floating at the top because it's so close to the light, or najas, like guppy grass, will often do fairly well in lights like that. But it's a really limited selection. You know, there are probably a few others too, but those are the ones that spring to mind in a situation like that. I should explain what T12s and T8s are, though.
Yes, please.
Okay, because I saw you giving me a quizzical look when I said that. Basically, the number after the T refers to 12ths of an inch, I guess. So a T12 means there are 12 twelfths of an inch, so 1 inch in diameter, the bulb.
Why don't they just call it a 1 inch?
I don't know. They don't, though.
And they just like to be confusing.
Right, and T8s are 8/12 of an inch.
Wow.
And so on. And then they have T5s, which we'll talk about later.
And that's a fifth?
T5 is 5/12 of an inch.
5/12 of an inch, yeah. So just under half an inch.
Yeah. And that's basically how it goes. But anyway, you can use them for, you know, some of the really low-light plants. They're fairly cheap, and that's a pro, I guess. They often come with the kit already. Sometimes you can get the bulbs themselves, not the fixtures per se, but the bulbs themselves in hardware stores for pretty cheap. And I'm not talking about the cool white bulbs, because those aren't usually very good for growing aquarium plants. I mean, some people have done it, but you can go there and get, say, sometimes they'll sell plant and aquarium bulbs in hardware stores.
Mm-hmm.
Those are typically kind of low on the... Their Kelvin rating is fairly low.
And tell us what the Kelvin, Kelvin rating is.
2800. They're different measurements of the spectrum of the light. And you can get, like, marine aquariums will often use 10,000 or 18,000 K Kelvin rating.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's more like the sun? The higher the number, it's, like, stronger like the sun?
Well, not exactly, but the higher ratings are good for growing things that, like marine photosynthetic organisms. If you want to
grow corals
and things like
that. What does
that
higher rating mean? Like, what does it have more of?
Well, it has, without getting too technical, because this we could get hung up on this for a long time, just say, excuse me, that there are different ratings of the spectrum. I don't want to, you know, go into it too much, but
okay.
These different numbers refer to the different wavelengths and so on of the light, and that if you go down to about 2800 or so, you get kind of a purplish or reddish sort of light. And it's okay for growing some plants, and I've grown plants to good success with that.
But it does not look
very good. The light
looks
funky.
Because it's a funky, it's not like a full spectrum light.
Right. And if you go more towards the like 6700 K,
mm-hmm.
that's a whiter light with some yellow in it too. And that looks more natural. Looks more like sunlight. And you can grow plants really well with that. So some people will take like a round of 2800 bulb and a 6700 K bulb or 6500 K.
So they kind of balance each other
and
out?
To balance each other out. And
what color
grow
are the, like the 10,000 ones
that
they use in marine tanks? What kind
and
of color do
they're, they're sort of whitish to bluish. Now, you're asking a colorblind person, as you know.
I'm sorry. I should not
confusing.
Ask you that. I should know by now.
A little bit confusing
for
me, but I think it's sort of whitish to bluish a lot of the time. And then you can go in different directions. Like the marine tanks, and this is a little bit off the topic, but they often use actinic bulbs, which are kind of a blue,
mm-hmm.
rich, but sort of dim blue light.
Mm-hmm.
And because the photosynthetic organisms, you know, that's
it.
Good for them too. So there are different spectral peaks that different organisms respond to. But basically, in freshwater, if you try to get 6,500 or 6,700 K you're doing pretty well. That's a good.
That's a good rating. Number.
Yes.
Okay. So any light can have a Kelvin scale rating.
Right. Right. Any light can be measured that way. And so it can be an LED light or whatever that's measured that way too. It's unique to fluorescence.
Not just fluorescence.
Right. But that's something that's kind of generally important to know for any light. So we should probably talk about it. I guess we just did.
We're so ahead of ourselves. Look at us.
Well, let's kind of go back to the single tube fluorescent idea and say that, picture this. I had a 20 high in a windowless basement a few years ago, and I had one, I think it was an 18 watt fluorescent single tube, and I grew Anubias in that tank, and they did fine. But I tried to grow Java Fern and Java Moth in that tank, and they did not thrive. They just kind of slowly wasted away,
okay.
Which is saying something, because you know, Java Fern and Java Moss
they're
are really pretty low-light
plants.
They didn't do very well in that particular setup anyway.
So their crappy bulbs don't get them, basically, right?
No. No, not exactly. I'm just saying...
I love that look that you give me. It's like, Kelly, you're being blunt again.
No, but I just mean that there are a few things you can do with single tube fluorescence, but it's not ideal for growing a wide range of plants.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
So, if all you want is Anubias...
In a 20-gallon long, because the water's shallower...
A 20-gallon high is going to be
a little
harder.
Different. Right.
Yeah.
So there are a few things you can grow in it, like the ones I mentioned before. Double tube fluorescent might be the way to go in Tom's case, in 20-gallon long. Like, you remember in Hawaii, the 20-gallon long I had in my office? That one was a double tube fluorescent.
What rating of itness?
Okay, well, I just had I think I had T8s in there most of the time. I sometimes use T12s. But I think I generally had a 6700K bulb and one around the 2800 bulb, the plant and aquarium light bulb. It's somewhere around there. I don't remember exactly. But I usually have one of each in there. And I would replace one bulb every 3 months because the bulbs only last between 6 months and a year.
Well, they don't, it's not like they don't turn on anymore, but they don't produce.
They don't produce anywhere near the amount of light that the plants need, although visibly there's not that
big
of a difference.
We can't really tell.
But the plants can tell. But anyway, I had, I would switch one of the bulbs out every 3 months. So each bulb was being replaced every 6 months, and I'd have one 6700 and one about 2800 in there, and it worked really well. I wasn't growing anything extremely high light. I was growing a lot of Java fern, but I also grew dwarf sag, Sagittaria subulata, in there, and, you know, some other things too. So it worked pretty well. You can grow a lot more if you have the double tubes, because you essentially you're getting double the light. And, in fact, you will need to grow a lot of faster-growing stem plants to compete with algae. Because if you don't, all that extra light's got to go somewhere that... You know, the system, the ecosystem's going to start wanting to use all that energy, and so algae will crop up if you don't. So if you're going to do double tubes, you probably want some supplemental CO2 or other carbon source, at least some Flourish Excel or other liquid carbon supplement, and if not, or you could do-it-yourself CO2. But I would recommend a carbon supplementation of some kind to keep those plants ahead of the algae, and you have a lot of plant mass in there. With fast-growing plants. And you have a lot of choices. A lot of choices that will do well in that much light. It comes out to be somewhere around 2 watts per gallon. And it will... A lot of things can grow that way. Watts per gallon is a very, very rough measure because it depends on the type of bulb and so on. But if you're talking about single-tube fluorescence and the tank's fairly shallow, it can be a rough rule of thumb. Rough at best. And, okay, anything else with that? It's harder to find the double-tube fluorescent strip lights.
Aren't they kind of discontinuing them?
They're starting to be phased out. I wouldn't say they're completely discontinued, but they are being phased out.
It's harder to find them now.
Mm-hmm. Because you can go to the store and find a single-tube cover for, you know, lots of different tanks, but it's harder to find the double-tube. Sometimes you just have to order them online, but it's not that hard to find them online.
So, for his 20-gallon long, is this a good option, a decent option...
It's a pretty good low-cost option that will give him a lot of possibilities in terms of plants.
The double.
The double, yeah, double tube fluorescent. If he can find
it. If he can find it.
You know, it's a little harder, as we said, but it's not impossible online. And the next one, let's go on to the next one now.
Okay, the T5 fluorescence, specifically T5.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the T5s are fairly popular still because there are... the idea behind them is that since they're a lot smaller diameter on the bulbs, you can put more bulbs in less space, and so you can get a lot more light out of it. And there are a couple of different types. There are the high output types and so on that are a higher wattage, even though they're the same size essentially as another one, but there's one that's more efficient in terms of its light production, one that just produces higher light, a couple of different types like that. The pros, you get more light per tube. You can grow really high light plants. They even use T5s in marine setups. They'll stack a whole bunch of them above a tank, like a fixture that's intended to hold 8 of them.
Wow.
And you put some actinic ones, those are the kind of the dim blue ones,
mm-hmm.
sort of, and then other ones in there, and you can grow, you know, things that require huge amounts of light. And they are more expensive. The fixtures are a bit different. You can't put a T5 or T12, typically. You can use the same fixture for a T5, not a T5, sorry, a T8 or a T12.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I didn't say T5 earlier when I meant T8, but I don't think I did. T8 or T12, you can typically put them in the same fixture. A T5, you cannot put in the same fixture.
Because it's smaller.
Right. And the T5 high output doesn't work in the same fixture that a T5 normal output would work in necessarily either. So that's...
Okay.
You got to be careful with that kind of stuff.
And how easy is it to still find those?
Those are fairly easy to find still.
Okay. And the bulbs, too.
Yeah, and the bulbs. Although it used to be like you look in an aquarium catalog and you had 2 pages of different sizes of bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that anymore so much with the fluorescence. Like I said, they're being phased out.
Okay. So in another 5 years, is it still going to be easy to find the bulbs to replace is the question.
I don't know. T5s are still remaining a lot more popular than the T8s or the T12s. But
okay.
We'll see. 5 years is a long time in terms of technology.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, let's go to the compact fluorescence now.
Okay. The fixtures, again, these are being phased out as well. You can find a few still, new ones, but...
Online, mostly?
Yeah, mostly online.
Not so much in the fish stores.
Not as much in the stores, but in the catalogs carry them still. They do produce good light. They're just not as popular as they used to be. I have a couple of fixtures.
Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a good question. Basically, the idea is they've taken the fluorescent bulbs and they folded them. And so they fold them into various shapes. Some of them are twisted, some of them are in U shapes,
mm-hmm.
some of them are in double U shapes.
You take up less space.
And you can get a lot of light. And mostly I've used them over a couple of different tanks, but I have had some of them where you get 65 watts over 20-gallon high, and you can grow a lot of things. And the plants will really go crazy if you have supplemental CO2 and nutrients in a tank like that. I've had... I made a lawn with Sagittaria subulata with that really went crazy. It looked really good, and it was just bright, happy green. And other plants like... stem plants like Luigia and several others.
So
anyway,
why do you think...
They turn nice
them out,
and red.
Though, if they work so nicely.
Well, they work nicely, but they're kind of... They do get a bit hot. That's one drawback.
Oh.
They get a bit hotter than normal fluorescence. I mean, a normal fluorescent, it gets warm to the touch and even hot to the touch while
mm-hmm.
it's on, if it's on long enough.
Okay.
Some of them. But these compact fluorescents get quite a bit hotter. Some of them you have to use fans for. Do you remember the one we used to have on the goldfish tank? The fan.
Oh, yes. That was annoying. It was so loud.
Mm-hmm. Cause I was,
and then you had to put the fan on a timer, too, if you had the lights on a timer.
Yeah, we had a goldfish tank where I was trying to grow things at the bottom of the tank, and so I had this complex fluorescent fixture at the top of it, and the fan was annoying. And we also had one on the 10-gallon nano reef. It was 4
right.
watts per gallon,
yeah.
And we were growing soft corals with it, and it worked well for that. And for the macroalgae and so on, it worked great for that. But, okay, there are a couple different types, too. Like I said, there's, but I didn't mention this, the fixtures themselves can be straight pin, where all the pins, each bulb has four pins, and the bulbs can be in one long line. They call that straight pin. Okay. It can be square pin, where it's in a square shape, mm-hmm. the pins. And so you don't want to go buy a bulb that's square pin and try to bring it home and put it in your straight pin, you know, fixture.
Right.
That's really annoying. And then there are the screw-in bulbs that just screw into the same sorts of endings that an incandescent bulb screw into.
Okay. But they're fluorescent?
And they're fluorescent, yeah. Oh, that's and interesting. I have a couple of those.
I guess the CFLs.
Yeah,
work
compact
that
fluorescent,
way,
like the ones
yeah.
you screw into the ceiling.
Yeah.
We have the 10-gallon tank upstairs, the one under Hiro's tank, has screw-in compact okay. fluorescence in it. So there's the thing about the heat. There's also, you know, these will last somewhere between 6 months and a year, like most fluorescent bulbs. And you can get some decent light. For 10-gallon planted tanks with CO2, if I put two 10-watt compact fluorescents, 20 watts per gallon in a 10-gallon tank, there's a lot you can grow. And I've done some, you know, had some nice tanks that way, nice planted tanks. But, like I said, they are falling out of favor somewhat. And so let's move on. I think that's a decent option too if you have a fixture like that, but they're harder to find. I wouldn't say that unless you already have a fixture, you find one secondhand and you're sure you can get bulbs for it. I wouldn't go with that option.
Yep. All right, let's talk about metal halide bulbs.
Okay. Now, unlike the other ones we've talked about so far, I haven't had any personal experience with metal halide.
There's a good reason for that.
There is. They're ridiculously expensive.
That's and usually they only use them on marine tanks, don't they?
Well, you can use metal halide if you want to grow plants, really, especially highlight plants, where you want a really deep tank and grow plants in it.
Oh.
Because metal halide...
Because it's got to reach that far down.
Yeah, it's got to reach really far down, and metal halides are good for that. But yeah, there are a lot of them are used in reef tanks where you want to grow, you know, small polyps, stony corals, or clams, things that require anemones, things that require a lot of light. So photosynthetic anemones I'm talking about, of course, and clams, things like that. Those are where you typically find them. The bulbs get really hot, so you have to...
Do you need a fan too? Or?
Not always a fan. Sometimes they just suspend the pendant above the tank with enough distance between the water and the tank because they do penetrate so effectively. You can put it, you know, above the tank quite a distance and it still works.
And that way it doesn't also heat up the tank.
That way it doesn't heat up the water nearly as much. And they're, like I said, they're very expensive in terms of the fixture and in terms of bulb replacement, also very expensive. But they last quite a long time and they're very effective.
Do I want to know how expensive a bulb is?
It's prohibitive for us. We wouldn't be able to do it. How about that? Okay. And now let's move on to the next one.
LEDs.
I guess I should just say metal halide. If you're starting out with a planted tank, metal halide is probably not the way to go.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, now LEDs.
Okay. LEDs. The wave of the future, the future, the future.
Nice
okay.
echo.
Yeah, I didn't even do that electronically.
Doesn't
not
that you're
I had
pretty
to tell
talented.
It wasn't a very good echo, but it's okay.
Oh, no, come on, it was a great echo. I bet it sounds even better recorded than sitting next to me.
I hope it sounds better recorded. So, LEDs, I said they were the wave of the future because, really, if you look at a catalog, from a recent one from a month or two ago, compared to one from a year or even 2 years ago, it's amazing how much more you'll find in terms of LEDs in aquarium lighting. They've been around for a while, but they've been increasing in utility and in the choices you have and so on. It was at one point they were almost a novelty thing, just sort of this bulb that you could stick in and it was barely adequate to see your fish, but it wouldn't really grow plants. Now it's getting more and more so that you can buy LED fixtures that will be bright enough to grow all sorts of photosynthetic marine organisms like the giant clams, like the anemones, the highlight corals, those kinds of things, as well as planted tanks. But there are still a lot of fixtures out there that are not capable of growing, you know, plants or photosynthetic organisms of any kind very well that are also LED lights. So you have to be careful when you're looking into LED lights.
Now, okay, tell me, how does it work with replacing LED bulbs in a fish tank? Because there's this, I don't know, kind of, isn't it, LEDs are, they never burn out, or...
LEDs are supposed to last ridiculously long. So they're supposed to last...
Is that true also for a fish tank, though?
They should, okay. In theory. Now, I've talked to people, I remember Andreka mentioned that she bought one of the LED Marineland, I think it was, fixtures, mm-hmm. and some of the bulbs in it, or some of the diodes in it, I guess, died out. They
so
died.
So they were just, like, never supposed to do that. Maybe they were defective or something.
And maybe those particular ones were defective. But the idea is, these bulbs, they're not really bulbs. They put reflective sort of lenses over the diodes.
Make it look like
so
a bulb.
It looks like a bulb. Anyway, LEDs are supposed to last for years and years and years and years. And if everything goes well, they do, but it doesn't always work. I had a couple, what was the brand? I don't know. I don't remember what the brand was. But they were LED moon lights for lighting at night, right? And they burned out after a few years of use. So they don't always last like they're
still
supposed to.
Still, a few years is better than, you know, 6 months for the fluorescence.
Yeah, yeah. But still, they did die eventually. Now... They seem to be getting, as I've mentioned, more and more so that you can grow almost anything with them, but they're still quite expensive. Very expensive, in fact. If you want to buy one for a marine tank, it's hundreds of dollars usually if you want to grow some good stuff. It depends on the size, too. A lot of the kits, you can buy a small nano reef kit for maybe a couple of $100s that has all the LED lighting built into it. And so it's not so prohibitive because you're getting the entire kit, including the aquarium, everything.
But if you're just getting it.
Yeah. We have a Marineland double bright fixture. So you can get single bright, double bright, and then you can get either plant capable or reef capable with the Marineland that they're selling. And then they also have a couple of other fixtures, but those are some of the main options they have. So I thought, well, with double bright, I should be able to grow some plants. So I put this double bright on a 20-gallon high. And after a few months trying to test it, realized it really wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. It wasn't working all that well. So I took it off and we put it on the goldfish tank at the 37 high. And it does fine there because all we are growing in there is Anubias. And they would grow without it.
It wasn't enough to grow the plants.
Not really. Plants didn't seem to like it. But they do have a plant-capable version that has twice the amount of bulbs on that one. As that one, or roughly twice the amount of bulbs that one does. And I'm sure that one would do fine. Because it's made to be. Because it has to do with the spectrum, too, like we're talking about the 6700K or, you know, different ratings. And I should just remind you that, you know, the Kelvin ratings are not... You don't have to have 6700 or 6500K for plants to grow well. There are various... different ratings at which you can grow plants, like the 5500 do fine, or somewhere in the 7000s can grow plants fine too. So it's just 6700 seems to be like a sweet spot, but there are other places where you can get plants to grow anyway. But you know, this area of technology is rapidly improving, and there are there's so little heat that's generated with LEDs. That's a great thing if you want to be able to regulate the heat in your aquarium. Don't want it to get too hot, that's good. And I would just say, if you want to look into it, I think a fixture for a 20-gallon high would run you somewhere around between $150 and $200 right now in the U.S. And that, to grow plants in a 20-gallon high, you'd need something around that much. You could probably get a double tube fluorescent strip for less than that, especially if you look around on eBay or, you know, Aquabit or something like that. Quite a bit less than that, maybe less than $50, perhaps even with the bulbs to start out with. So that is a more economical option. But of course
you would be replacing the bulbs.
You'd be replacing the bulbs and the LEDs over time if they last as well as they're supposed to. And as
but
long
I mean
as
in the other
to.
One.
Yeah.
The double...
Right, in the double tube
the fluorescent
you'd be
you have
replacing
to replace them
often.
Much more frequently.
And you wouldn't be replacing the LEDs nearly as often.
So it depends on if you want to go with the investment mindset or the right now mindset.
Right. And I would, if you are going to get some, I would go for one that's specifically intended for plant growth. And that one would probably be bright enough that you'd want to supplement carbon.
I mean, if he's going to get an LED one.
Yeah, if you're going to get the LED one, you'd want to supplement the carbon because the light will be bright enough that you'll need to if you want the plants to succeed and outcompete the algae. And hopefully that is a little bit of an overview. And if you have any other specific questions, we'd be happy to answer those. But that should give you a little bit of an idea of what to expect with the different lighting options over a 20-gallon high.
Alrighty, we are going to continue with Tony's email. And he says, salutations, Aquarimax. That's a great word.
It is.
I thank you for your recent show and discussions. Hearing about the shrimp bowl was very interesting. Incidentally, I'd be pleased to do a review of the new third edition Planted Ecology. I should be receiving it in a couple of weeks. That would be great.
Yes, we would love that. So please do.
Mm-hmm.
Please send it in.
I'd also like to congratulate you on your 150th show. Now that is a real milestone. Well done, Russ and Kelly. Yay for
thank
us.
You.
I'm patting my back.
It is. We actually hit 150, yep. Haven't we?
I know. Rutz said today that's what it was. I'm like, really?
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty crazy.
Thank you for sticking with us.
Yes, we are glad. Here's my question for the day. Russ, what is your biggest tank currently and who is living in it? Also, what is the largest tank you'd consider keeping? And last, what is the largest tank you could realistically fit into the house?
Okay. Well, let's see. Realistically is an interesting word. our biggest tank currently is 55 gallons.
I think it's the biggest one we've ever had while we've been married.
This is our second 55. Mm-hmm. We had one before we moved to Hawaii, which regrettably we had to sell before
moving to
Hawaii.
That was a nice one. It had cichlids in it.
Yeah.
It was
a nice Mbuna tank. And then this one was a present from John the Web Guru.
Yes.
Okay. They were moving and downsizing and they said, hey, why don't you take our 55? So we did. And so now we have our second 55. And right now, what's living in it?
We have our beta sorority tank and a few leftovers.
Yes, and bristles.
Oh, yes, and bristle noses.
Yes. So we've got, how many females
do we have in there?
Somewhere around 20? 20, probably. 20 female betas from our spawn, plus a few more from work.
Mm-hmm.
So around 20 in there. Then we've got
Lone rainbow fish.
The last remaining dwarf rainbow fish, a couple of guppies, and a lot of bristle noses.
And a catfish.
Rescue Corydoras, bronze Corydoras.
Somebody brought him in, they couldn't keep him?
Keep him, and they said, will you take him? So I will. I did. And
he's lonely, though.
To get him some friends, but I'm not sure there's space in the tank, but we'll figure something out. And there's some assassin snails in there, some shrimp, and a lot of Anubias.
Yeah.
I just thinned that out recently. That's what's in there right now.
The sorority tank is going pretty well. I mean, there's enough of them in there that they just all hang out. They get along pretty well.
No real violence.
Yeah.
Once in a while, a little bit of superficial fin damage, but nothing worse than that. And it's not very common. They're doing well. And they look really nice in there.
Yeah, they came out really pretty.
Yeah. And incidentally, we sold the last of our males
recently. We did.
So
we have our fireplace hearth back.
Yeah.
Kind of excited about that.
Yeah. I just have one of the babies at work, one of the males at work, and that's it.
Yeah, we kept the prettiest one.
Yeah, my favorite.
Just took him to work. Did you name him yet?
No, I didn't.
He needs a name.
He does need a name.
We should have a contest, maybe.
Maybe so.
We'll talk about that.
So, let's see. Tony's next question is, what is the largest tank you'd consider keeping? Well, darn, that's a hard question. I don't know. As long as I had, let's just pipe dream here for a second. If I had the resources and the time and the space, I would go up to astronomically large numbers. Because I would love to have a really big tank. But realistically, though, fitting it in the house, I think right now is a 55. What we've got. I don't think we could fit a bigger one in the house right now. Trying to get it through our stairs and the doorway and everything, it was hard enough to get this thing.
We have kind of narrow doorways, and it's an older house, so it's kind of narrow. Things don't fit very well.
Yeah, so unless the tank had approximately the same footprint as a 55, we probably couldn't go any higher than that.
But in the future...
Yeah, I would love to have a 240-gallon tank.
We've talked about how it would be really neat to have a wall that is a fish tank, like, that divides, I don't know, living room from kitchen or something, you know, something artistic.
Right, and so we'd both be into that. Mm-hmm. We would have to probably install an automatic water changer.
Yeah, but you want to do that anyway.
I would do that anyway, but yeah.
And a pond. I don't know how many gallons we want a pond to be, and that doesn't technically count as a tank, I guess.
But we do want to build an indoor pond at some point.
Yes. Ooh, I would love. We talked about this before too. If we have, like, a split level room, where up at the upper part of the room, the higher part of the room, you can sit around it like a pond and watch it. But then it has the shelf right there, you know, between. The up higher part of the room and the lower part of the room. I'm not explaining this very well. I got to draw it. But that's the wall of the tank. So from the lower part of the room, it's like you're looking into the water in the tank, and the upper part of the room, you can sit around it like a pond. That would be cool.
They have something sort of like that in the St. Louis Zoo.
Yeah, those were neat.
And we saw those there, and that sort of inspired the idea.
Yeah.
They have some great tanks set up that are you can observe from two completely different vantage points and in different floors. And so that would be really cool, and it could be huge as far as we're concerned, right?
Yeah, right?
We don't have the resources, of course, right now, but anything... of course, you get
when we get our standard Rich and Famous contract, right?
Yeah, there you go. And then hopefully that's a pretty fair answer, I think. And then Tony answered the questions for us, too.
Oh,
and
what
he
does
challenges
Tony have?
AquariMax listeners to send in their information about it, too. To answer it. He says his largest tank currently is 20 gallons, which is currently keeping killifish fry, and he has a 38, but it's not yet stocked.
Ah.
And the largest he'd want to keep is a 200-gallon tank. Might be lovely for keeping goldfish, or maybe
that would be beautiful.
Discus.
That would be cool, too.
Yeah, discus would be stunning. Either one, really, because goldfish, if you put several large goldfish tank like that, they're stunning too in their own way. And largest he could realistically keep, he says, well, my basement floor could probably support the weight of the 200. The challenge would be getting it down the stairs and setting up some sort of automatic water change system. So it's kind of the same idea. Failing that, a 55 might be more realistic.
You know what we need?
What?
We need a construction company that is run by aquarium people, and so they just design their new houses
around their fish tanks.
Around fish tank systems, like with automatic water change plumbing already in there, and
that would be something.
So you can go get your construction education and start an AquariMax home building business.
There you go.
Now.
Yeah, I don't know what we'd call it. We'd have to come up with something clever.
Construction Max.
I don't think that's quite as catchy as AquariMax.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay.
Aquara Home.
We'll keep working on it. Okay. Well, thanks, Tony, and I do extend Tony's challenge to you all. You can send in your answers to those three questions. And
we have one more.
We have our last contributor for the day.
And that is Ryan in Arizona.
Yeah.
And he says, the 15th annual Southwest Area Killifish event is coming up on Saturday, March 9th in Phoenix, Arizona.
So if you're in Arizona or anywhere near Arizona, you're going to be traveling to Arizona, keep that in mind.
You should go. He says, the event is free to attend and open to the public and will feature a raffle, two auctions, and three guest speakers. Although officially a killifish event, you can expect to see betas, cichlids, catfish, and live bears, as well as live plants and live food cultures.
So something for everybody.
He's got a link there that we can put up for details and registration.
Cool.
Thank you for sending us the announcement.
Yeah, and we'll put that link up. It's already on Facebook where Ryan posted it, but we'll put it up on the show page as well.
I think that's interesting they have an event built around just killifish.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normal to have like a...
Well, there are several killifish associations out there.
Really?
Yeah. Killifish keepers are really pretty into the hobby.
So are there a lot of them in Arizona, or do people just travel to it?
I'm imagining there's some of both.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I would love to attend an event like that. It's a little too far away for us, but wouldn't it be fun?
That would be fun.
Okay.
We should send us the event for next year, too.
Yeah. I think that's about all for this week.
I think so. In fact, we even went a little bit long, but I'm sure you guys will forgive us.
We were a little bit short last week, so
yeah,
there you go.
We're making it up. May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.